This is Audible.
Blood Mage, Dark Impulse Book 1. Written by Edmund Hughes. Narrated by Aaron Bateman. Chapter 1. No missed calls and no new texts. Jack felt a little disappointed, though not the slightest bit surprised. He stuffed his phone back into his pocket and fell into step alongside his fellow passengers, most of whom were either yawning or stretching their legs. The flight had been a tedious 8 hours, and that was including a layover in Boston and a switch to an uncomfortably tiny jet for the last stretch to Lesterin Island. Jack followed the rest of the group on autopilot, only slowing and going his own way when he realized that they were heading to the small airport's baggage claim. He'd only brought his backpack as a carry-on. A few changes of clothes were all he really needed, given that he wasn't planning on staying for long. Seeing Lesterin Island from the sky hadn't brought the sense of familiarity he'd been expecting. It was a small island, 100 square miles in area, but with a rocky shelf of cliffs cordoning off the eastern half. From the air, it looked like a stray smudge of green against the deep blue canvas of the ocean, almost like something unintentional. A tiny, forgotten oasis of storm-weathered land against an endless expanse of sea. The airport only had a single terminal, and Jack's footsteps echoed through the silent lobby as he made his way out the main entrance. He stood at the edge of the sidewalk, feeling out of place and a little at a loss for what to do next. The sole taxi driver noticed him immediately, snuffing out a half-finished cigarette and standing to attention. "Need a ride?" asked the driver. "I'm expecting someone," said Jack. "Hotel recommendation, then?" asked the driver. "I can get you a discount at a good one if you drop my name." Jack smiled and shook his head. "I have a place to stay, but thanks." The driver frowned a little, glancing down at the cigarette he'd prematurely extinguished. "Who are you here to visit?" asked the driver. "I probably know them. Everybody knows everyone in Lessertown." "I'm here to settle my grandfather's estate," said Jack. "Peter Masterson." The taxi driver grimaced, and the expression added a dozen wrinkles onto his already aged face. He nodded a few times, and Jack could see genuine emotion in his reaction. "Fuck," said the taxi driver. "I knew Peter. Everyone here did. He was a real stand-up guy." "Yeah," said Jack. "I guess he was." He let himself fall into reminiscence in the space of the silence that followed. Jack had lived on Lesterin Island until he was 10, but strangely, he could barely remember his grandfather. He felt a stab of shame as he reflected on how little he'd felt when his aunt and uncle had told him about his grandfather's passing and volunteered him as the one to travel out to settle the old man's estate. He did remember his grandfather's mansion, though more in a blurry, conceptual sense than in vivid detail. He also remembered how abruptly he'd left it as a child, and how scared he'd been on the way to live with his aunt and uncle after his parents had died. A few of the other passengers had caught up to him, and the taxi driver was already offering them his services. Jack walked further down the drop-off lane, spotting a short Asian girl next to a black car holding a sign with his name on it. He started toward her, but she only seemed to realize who he was as he closed the last few feet.
"Hi," he said. "I'm Jack."
"Mr. Masterson." The girl spoke in a voice almost too faint to be audible. She gave him a deep bow, which left Jack feeling a little awkward. "My name is Ryoko. I'm here to escort you back to the mansion."
"Ryoko," said Jack. "It's nice to meet you."
"Likewise, sir," said Ryoko. He reached out to shake her hand, but she was already opening one of the car's doors for him.
Thanks, he said. "And by the way, you don't have to call me sir or Mr. Masterson or anything like that. Just Jack is fine."
"Of course, sir," said Ryoko.
Jack blinked, unsure of whether she'd understood his point. "You're one of the mansion's new maids, right?" he asked. She was certainly dressed for the part. Ryoko wore a black blouse and skirt with white accents, a variation of the classic French maid outfit. She was pretty, with an oval face, petite figure, and black hair twisted into the neatest bun he'd ever seen. The maids had all seemed old and strict to him back when he'd been young, but maybe that had just been him viewing them through a child's perspective.
"Yes, sir,"
she said quietly. She didn't elaborate any further. Jack felt like he should say something more or ask her something else. Ryoko waited, politely holding the car door open for him, her gaze downcast and demure. "Thanks," he said. He climbed into the car's back seat. He felt out of place as the door shut, and for a few silent seconds, he considered whether coming back to the island had been a good idea. He'd belonged here once, but that wasn't the case anymore. In fact, it had been a long time since Jack had felt like he'd belonged anywhere. After his parents had died, he'd lived with his aunt and uncle, but they'd shipped him off to boarding school at the first convenient opportunity. College had been a little better, but the few friends he'd made over the course of his 4-year degree program had gone their own ways afterward. He'd been left with no choice other than to return to living with his extended family, whose hospitality had been lukewarm at best.
"Is your seatbelt fastened, sir?"
asked Ryoko from the front seat. "Yeah," said Jack.
"Do you have any stops you'd like me to make on the way?"
asked Ryoko.
"Ms. White told me to tell you that the lawyer will be expecting you at the mansion."
Ms. White. Katie. Jack had half expected her to be the one waiting next to the car with the sign. He'd certainly hoped for her to be there. Thinking about Katie made the impending tedium of dealing with his grandfather's estate seem like a small price to pay. Katie had been the daughter of Jack's grandfather's assistant, Tamara. She'd lived in the mansion with him and had been his closest childhood friend. They'd done everything together, and even shared a silly, juvenile romance as curious 10-year-olds. Jack still remembered the way they'd proudly sworn that they'd marry each other as soon as they were grown up, and all the affection they'd shown to each other through hugs and kisses on the cheek. Those kisses. He felt ridiculous remembering them, of all things, given how hazy the rest of that period of his life was to him now. The idea of seeing Katie again gave a sense of meaning to his return to the island. It gave him something to look forward to. He'd spent the past few months feeling aimless and anxious, with a useless degree and a dim outlook on the future. When his aunt and uncle had asked him to make the trip out to Lesterin, he'd immediately started wondering about her and imagining their reunion. He'd thought about her so much in the time since he'd left. Knowing that he was only a few minutes away from seeing her again sent flutters of anticipation through him.
"Mr. Masterson?" said Ryoko.
Jack sat up a little straighter. He caught sight of his dopey, grinning expression in the rearview mirror and forced himself to relax. "No stops," he said. "Head straight to the mansion." Chapter 2 Lesser Town was Lesterin Island's sole population center, and rather appropriately named. Jack barely remembered the town itself, but as the car made its way down the central street, he was surprised by how small and localized it was. None of the buildings were more than 5 stories high, except for the lighthouse visible next to the waterfront. The signs of the village store and tavern were wood-carved reliefs, dirtied and stained by years of open exposure to the harsh elements. A statue of the island's discoverer, perched upon the bow of a ship, sat in the middle of a traffic circle in the center of the town. Jack had always thought it looked more like a scene of a man about to dive off of a sinking ship to his death. There were few cars, and most of the ones Jack did see were parked on the side of the street or in the driveways of townhouses. He remembered playing in the road with Katie as children and feeling confused when the adults chastised them for it, given how infrequent the town's traffic was. Most of the tourist shops that Jack recalled from his childhood now had their windows boarded up. He wasn't sure if it was just for the current season or indefinitely, but he still felt a surge of nostalgic claustrophobia as he considered it. Most of the island's residents lived and died there. They were lucky if they took a few dozen trips across the ocean over the course of their lives. They lived a contained existence, and he could only wonder if they were truly happy with it. Ryoko drove the car along a meandering road that ascended a hill as they continued toward the mansion. Lesterin Island was geographically lopsided, with its far eastern coast rising on a slant into jagged, looming cliffs facing out toward the ocean. Lesser Town had been constructed near the island's west coast, not just for convenience, but because it was the main region of the island where there was a significant amount of level ground. His grandfather's estate, had been built upon a large shelf of level land, three-quarters of the way up the hill. Jack spotted it in the distance as they approached, and found that he was surprised that it still looked as large as he remembered. He knew that time had a way of distorting memories, but apparently his childhood wonder at the sprawling size of his grandfather's estate had endured the years. It had been a lively place, with his grandfather often hosting parties for anyone in town who cared to attend, and throwing celebrations for every holiday that outdid anything Jack had experienced in the time since. It had also had a constant inflow of both visitors and residents. Jack and his parents had lived there, but so had Katie and her mother, half a dozen maids, a cook, a gardener, and a few other miscellaneous servants. It was hard for Jack to resolve his memory of the mansion with what he saw, as Ryoko pulled the car up to the wrought iron gate cordoning off the estate. The mansion's paint was cracking visibly in places, giving an ominous edge to the muted pairing of gray and beige tones. The lawn was overgrown, and the cherry trees in the side yard had dropped their fruit onto the grass, making it look speckled with oversized droplets of blood. A single crow was perched on the weather vane atop the mansion's roof. It stared down at the car as the gate slowly opened for them, enticing Jack to look away after a couple of seconds. Ryoko drove up and around the drop-off loop that ran between one of the mansion's now empty flower gardens and the front entrance, and then put the car in park. "Do you have more errands to run or something?" asked Jack. Ryoko gave the smallest of shakes of her head. "I'll park the car in the garage and head in through the servants' entrance, sir," she said.
"You could just park it here and come inside with me," said Jack.
Ryoko didn't say anything, and after a couple of seconds, it felt too weird for Jack to press the point.
"Or not," he said. "Anyway, thanks for picking me up."
He got out of the car and shouldered his backpack. He walked slowly up the stairs to the door, almost feeling like he was moving through a dream. He was finally back, and he would get to see Katie again. The door was unlocked, and Jack felt comfortable letting himself in. The mansion's foyer was much as he remembered it, except emptier and quieter. The doors to the left and right led to the garage and the activity room. An archway staircase led up to the second floor where the bedrooms were, and the hallway underneath it went to the lounge, which was connected to the kitchen and the dining room. The servants' rooms were off the kitchen, but he'd never spent much time there as a child. He was still taking in the emotions of being back at the mansion after so long when Katie appeared at the top of the archway stairs. Seeing her almost took Jack's breath away. She was the same little girl Jack remembered, his playmate, but now all grown up. Katie had medium-length wavy brown hair, and she let it fall freely across her shoulders. She was cute, rather than pretty, with hazel eyes and a dusting of freckles across the bridge of her nose and cheeks. She had a petite figure, which surprised Jack, as he remembered her being almost as tall as he was. Her outfit consisted of a loose maroon blouse and tight jeans, showing off a body that was fit and attractive, if a little light on curves. But most importantly, Katie wasn't smiling. She walked down the stairs slowly, not looking at him as she approached. Jack took notice, but he didn't care enough to wipe the dopey grin off his face. "Katie," he said. The feeling of her name on his tongue sent another rush of emotion through him.
"I go by Catherine now," said Katie.
"Or Kate."
"Oh," said Jack.
"Right, sorry." A silent moment passed. Katie had made her way to the bottom of the stairs, but she still kept one hand on the railing.
"I can't believe it's been 12 years, he said. "It's so weird being back here. How have you been?"
"Fine," said Katie.
"And you?"
Her tone was curt, with an edge of coldness to it. This wasn't how Jack had imagined their reunion. She was supposed to smile and run over to hug him. He'd expected the two of them to immediately fall back into their old rhythm of teasing and affection.
"I've been good," said Jack. He was almost afraid to say anything else.
Katie had her arms folded now, and she was looking at the door rather than him.
"Peter's lawyer will be here any minute," she said. "Why don't you go and wait for her in the lounge, assuming you remember where that is?"
"I remember," said Jack. "It's been a while, but I remember. And I remember you, too,
And how close we used to be.
Katie finally looked at him directly. The weight of her gaze was enough to make the air feel heavy, along with Jack's heart. Her expression was distant, guarded, and laced with a lifetime of experiences of which he knew nothing about.
"Good," said Katie, ignoring his second comment. "I'll send her along when she gets here."
Chapter 3. The lounge was more or less as Jack remembered it, with a few small alterations. The furniture had been replaced, with black leather couches instead of the soft white ones he remembered, which his parents had always chastised him about staining. The fireplace was currently unlit, and the large flat-screen TV next to it was turned off. Jack could still hear Katie's faint footsteps in the other room. He sighed and collapsed into one of the couches, pulling out his phone to burn time until the lawyer showed up. He listened to Katie opening the door and sharing a quiet conversation with someone a few minutes later. A woman with graying hair and thick spectacles entered the lounge, smiling as she spotted Jack, who stood to greet her.
"You must be Jack," said the woman.
"Hello, I'm Louise West."
"Nice to meet you."
Jack smiled and shook her hand. He gestured to the couches, offering her a seat.
"You look so much like Peter did when he was younger," said Louise.
"I've heard so much about you from him."
"Oh." Jack frowned a little, wondering what his grandfather could have possibly told her, given how little they'd communicated.
"You have?"
"I can't imagine what you're going through right now," said Louise. She took her spectacles off and took a slow, shaky breath. "Peter was a close friend of mine, though I'm sure almost everyone here on the island would probably say the same thing."
Jack didn't know what to say, so he opted to stay silent and give her a second to compose herself.
"Some people, you just really feel their loss once they're gone," she said as she swallowed hard. "Death can be such a cruel thing."
"Yeah," said Jack.
"Oh, look at me, making such a pointless fuss."
Louise sighed and set a manila folder down on the couch next to her.
"Let's get to it, then. Your grandfather's will."
Jack nodded, watching as she pulled a yellowed page of paper loose from the folder.
"To Jeff and Patricia Douglas?"
she said in a questioning tone.
"That's my aunt and uncle," said Jack. "They couldn't make the trip themselves." Or rather, they hadn't felt the need to, he thought. Jack's aunt was technically his father's cousin, and he wasn't sure if she'd met his grandfather more than once or twice over the course of her life.
"Well, your grandfather left them a sizable sum of money," said Louise.
"Close to $100,000. They'll have to get in touch with me to claim it, however, as they aren't listed as the primary beneficiary."
Jack raised an eyebrow at that. Louise smiled at him.
"To my grandson, Jack Masterson, who I love and miss every day," continued Louise. "I leave half of the mansion, along with the rest of my remaining assets."
Jack stared at her, dumbfounded to the point of speechlessness. Had he just heard that correctly?
"I've been over his financials," said Louise. "The mansion itself is worth somewhere in the range of $5 to $6 million. The assets are a mixture of stocks, bonds, and liquid funds, and they total a little over $13.4 million. He was a wealthy man, in both spirit and money."
$13 million? Jack ran his hands through his hair. His aunt and uncle had led him to believe that his grandfather was broke and basically on the cusp of bankruptcy. He'd been expecting to spend a few days on the island settling outstanding debts and cleaning up the financial aftermath of a man who'd been living far beyond his means. And now, he was a millionaire.
$13.4 million, and half the mansion," said Louise, emphasizing the second part.
"Right," said Jack. "Wait, half the mansion? Who gets the other half?"
"He left it to both you and Catherine White," said Louise. "The two of you will be co-owners, unless one of you buys the other out. It's a curious choice, I have to say. I warned Peter against it when he first drafted his will, as it seemed like it would only complicate this process."
Jack nodded, feeling confused
and strangely, a little excited by the situation. What had been his grandfather's hope in doing that? He could have just left Katie some of his money if he'd wanted to. Was this what she'd been upset about before?
"The information for your grandfather's bank and brokerage accounts is on the second sheet," said Louise. "Miss White implied that the two of you would be in touch to talk about selling the mansion shortly. There's already a contract drawn up for you to transfer ownership in the event of a sale."
Jack nodded, feeling too overwhelmed to say goodbye to the woman properly. He'd been a broke, aimless post-grad at the start of the day. What was he now? And what was he supposed to do now?
He heard Louise leaving through the front entrance and slowly made his way back into the foyer. Katie stood next to the door with her arms folded across her chest. She didn't look at him as he approached, even though Jack knew she could hear his footsteps.
"Ryoko made dinner for you and put it in the small fridge in the kitchen before she left," said Katie.
"All right," said Jack.
"The contract Louise gave you is pretty straightforward," said Katie. "Just fill in your bank info, sign it, and the money will be wired to you once the sale is complete." Her tone was straightforward and firm, and it made Jack feel so sad and confused. Where was the peppy girl full of warmth and openness he remembered from his childhood? Where was Katie, and who was he talking to instead?
"Can we slow things down a little bit?" asked Jack. "I haven't had any time to think about this."
"There isn't much to think about," said Katie. "Neither of us need this mansion."
"I don't mean just the sale," he said. "Jesus, it's been 12 years, Katie, Catherine. I was hoping that we could catch up."
Katie finally looked at him, and again, it was with those intense eyes.
"It's like you said, Jack, it's been 12 years. Where would we even start?"
"Anywhere you want," he said. "I've missed you, Katie, so much." He held her gaze. There was something intimate about even just making eye contact with her, even through the coldness of her demeanor.
"All right, then," said Katie. "Let's start with a question. Why?"
"Why what?"
"Why should we even bother catching up?" asked Katie. "Or better yet, why didn't I ever hear from you?"
Jack shook his head, frowning a little.
"I don't know," he said. "I was messed up after the car accident. I was just a kid, and suddenly having my parents die and being with my aunt and uncle, I barely even spoke for months."
Katie smiled, but it wasn't a pleasant expression.
"You really don't remember, do you?" she said. "Jack, you weren't the only one affected by the accident, and I gave you time, months, years. You never wrote. You never called."
"You didn't call me either," said Jack.
"I didn't have your number," snapped Katie. "But you had mine. How could you not? It was the mansion's phone number, same as it ever was."
We sent letters," said Katie. "Your grandfather would write one of his own and let me put one of mine in the same envelope. Cards for your birthday and Christmas. And it was like throwing them into the fireplace for all we heard back."
Jack could only stare at her, stunned by the revelation.
"I never got them," said Jack. "My aunt, she never told me about any letters. She mentioned the cards my grandfather would send, but I was always away at boarding school. I never saw any of them."
Katie closed her eyes, looking as though the knowledge of him never having read her letters hurt as much, if not more, than thinking she'd been ignored. She shook her head, her expression growing distant and cold again.
"It's been too long, Jack," she said slowly. "And I mean that when I say it. It's been too long for us to be able to just pick up where we left off."
"Then let's pick up somewhere else," said Jack. "Come on, we can eat, hang out in the mansion, spend tonight talking about what our lives are like now."
Katie shook her head. "I'm meeting my fiancé for dinner." The remaining vestiges of Jack's imagined reunion with Katie finally evaporated. He felt betrayed, even though he knew it was a ridiculous reaction to have after more than a decade of being out of touch. What had he expected? That she'd be here waiting for him, holding to their silly childhood promise as though it had been anything more than playful words?
Oh, he said simply.
Katie's expression finally softened, though the pitying look she gave him hurt even more than her coldness. She glanced around as though searching for a distraction.
Be sure to lock the door once I leave, said Katie, including the deadbolt. Ryoko and I have our own keys, and I left yours on the counter in the kitchen. The code for the gate's control panel is on the tag.
Jack nodded, not trusting himself to talk past the painful lump in his throat.
The island is far more dangerous than it seems, said Katie.
Trust me when I say that, Jack. Even if things were different, we wouldn't want to be staying here. It's time for both of us to move on.
She waited, but Jack couldn't think of anything else to say to her. He watched as she left through the front door. Then, as instructed, he locked it and secured the deadbolt.
Chapter 4. It felt strange for Jack to be alone in the mansion. It had always been bustling with activity during his childhood. Now, it was empty, and the silence was almost deafening, broken only by the occasional purr of the central air conditioning. His grandfather, or more likely Katie, had probably let most of the staff go in anticipation of the mansion being sold. It made Jack's heart hurt a little to come back to his childhood home with the knowledge that it might be the last time he'd ever see it. Jack gave himself a tour, walking through the rooms on the ground floor and comparing the mansion to his memories. He was surprised by how easy it was to spot the changes, given how much trouble he'd had remembering the mansion before his return. The activity room, in particular, had been completely overhauled. Jack remembered it as more of a playroom for children, with toys, picture books, and a thick carpet. The room was now a home gym, complete with weights, a heavy bag that looked like it had seen a good amount of use, and a treadmill. He went upstairs next, taking his time moving from room to room. All of the guest rooms were clean, with made beds and spotless carpets, except for one. His old room was, as far as he could tell, exactly as he had left it. He picked up an old Batman action figure from the nightstand and felt a rush of nostalgia. He wouldn't stay in the mansion for longer than a night or two. How could he? Katie was right. It was his grandfather's home, not his, and even his old childhood room didn't feel like it belonged to him anymore. Jack made his way back downstairs and found the sandwich and chips that Ryoko had left for him in the kitchen. He understood why Katie had given her the night off, but still would have gladly accepted her quiet company over being on his own. He ate slowly, appreciating the distraction of the food. When he finished, he left his plate in the sink and headed for the door. It was early evening, and he hoped that watching the sunset might help clear his head. Jack unlatched the deadbolt and headed outside. The weather was nice, and there was a warm, sleepy breeze that made the overgrown grass sway from side to side. He walked over to one of the cherry trees and sat down underneath it. The mansion was high enough up the slope for him to have a view out over the ocean. The sun was setting on the other side of Lesser Town, and it left a brilliant streak of red and orange across the water as it sank below the horizon. $13.4 million, and probably a good deal more if he went along with Katie's plan to sell the mansion. It was more money than Jack could understand the effect of. Would he ever even have to work a normal job again? Probably not. Somehow, the realization still wasn't enough to lift his mood. Why hadn't his aunt and uncle told him about the letters Katie and his grandfather had sent? They'd mentioned the Christmas and birthday cards, but only in passing when he talked to them over the phone from boarding school. He'd never actually seen any of them, but the fact that his aunt and uncle had received them meant that Katie and his grandfather had been sending the letters to the right address. More importantly, why had he been sent away from the island in the first place? Jack had never stopped to consider it before. After his parents had died, the next closest family member by blood and by relationship had been his grandfather. He'd already been an old man back then, but he'd been kind and loving, and he could have easily done the job of raising Jack with the help of maids and nannies.
Jack was still pondering the question when he caught sight of movement out of the corner of his eye. There was someone standing on the road a short distance from the mansion's gate. A woman with a long blonde ponytail, dressed in a white sweater, purple skirt, and black leggings. She was standing with the sun at her back, which made her look almost like she had an aura of fire around her shoulders. She was attractive, with a pale face that had pronounced, elegant cheekbones. Her breasts were large enough to give form to the otherwise baggy sweater, and the tight leggings showed off the curve of her hips and an impressive butt.
"Hi," called out Jack. "Are you looking for someone?"
The woman had been staring at the mansion's door through the bars of the wrought iron gate and only slowly turned her gaze to meet Jack's. Her eyes were pale blue, with flecks of brown in them. He'd never seen irises like that before.
"Yes and no," said the woman, smiling a little. "To tell you the truth, I don't really know why I'm here."
Jack chuckled.
"Yeah, I know that feeling all too well," he said.
The woman didn't reply. She slowly looked up and down, her eyes appraising him as though he was an item at an auction. Jack couldn't decide whether it made him feel uncomfortable or flattered.
"Were you here to see my grandfather?" asked Jack. "I'm assuming you know already, but he passed on recently."
"I know." A hint of sadness entered the woman's expression. "I knew Peter quite well. We had an unorthodox friendship. I held him in high regard."
"That's interesting to hear," said Jack, raising an eyebrow. The woman appeared to be around 30, but she had an ageless look to her and could have easily been 5 or 10 years younger or older. It seemed a little strange to think about his elderly grandfather befriending a gorgeous young blonde.
"Your grandfather was one of a kind," said the woman. "This island will feel his loss through its bones." Jack nodded, though her words sent a shiver down the back of his neck. "I'm Mira, by the way," said the woman. "I'd shake your hand, but..." She let her knuckles tap against one of the gate's iron bars.
"Oh!"
Jack hurried over to the gate's electronic panel and started to tap in the code on the keys Katie had left for him.
"Sorry about that. Bad manners on my part. My name's Jack."
He gestured for her to come into the mansion's courtyard and shook her hand. Her fingers felt ice cold.
Chapter 5.
Jack led Mira into the mansion, feeling a slight sense of hesitation as he fumbled for a light switch he'd forgotten the location of in the foyer. She seemed friendly enough, but she was still basically a random stranger. Still, she'd known his grandfather, and he felt like he could use the company. Mira politely took her shoes off and glanced around, looking for something.
"You have the place to yourself?" she asked.
"Yeah," Jack grinned, feeling oddly proud of the fact. "For now, at least. I'm probably not going to be staying on the island for long. The mansion is more than likely going to end up being sold."
"That's unfortunate," said Mira. "I suspect there's more to this place than meets the eye."
Jack couldn't help but think that there was also more to her than met the eye. He watched as she took slow steps across the floor, like a cat in a new environment. He felt suddenly awkward.
"Do you want to sit down in the lounge and talk some more?"
"Is that what you want, Jack?" asked Mira. There was a teasing and suggestive edge to her tone, as though she was giving him a subtle test. Jack smiled and glanced up at the chandelier overhead.
"Come on," he said. "I think I saw a bottle of wine in the kitchen, if you want something to drink. Or water, of course."
"Wine sounds wonderful," replied Mira. She smirked at him and followed along as he led her into the lounge. As strange as the situation was, and as strange as Mira was, it felt right. He'd spent enough time feeling lonely in the recent months, and was still emotionally bruised by the way his reunion with Katie had gone. Why should he have to spend the evening alone while she was off having a date night with her fiancé?
He found the wine in the kitchen, along with two glasses, and returned to the lounge. Mira was sitting on one of the couches with her hands folded and legs crossed. She'd sat down directly in the middle of it, meaning the only way for Jack to join her was to sit with their bodies in direct contact. The mischievous smile on her face made him think she'd done it intentionally.
"I only arrived back on the island this afternoon," said Jack. "I'm still getting used to being in the mansion, and I'm also a little jet-lagged."
"You don't have to make excuses for yourself," said Mira. "It's quite all right." She took a slow sip of her wine and stared at him. Jack found it hard to rise to her intensity. She was weird, but he found himself liking her more and more by the second.
"You look so much like Peter did when he was younger," said Mira.
Jack smiled, then frowned a little as he considered what she'd said.
"That's an interesting compliment," said Jack. "You've seen pictures of him from when he was my age?"
Mira took another sip of her wine instead of answering.
"Your grandfather had an outsized shadow," she said. "The people of the island counted on him for more than I think they realized. I know you mentioned selling the mansion earlier, but I suspect that the mayor will attempt to court you into remaining here."
Jack slowly shook his head. It felt like she was talking past him, like they were having two separate conversations that just happened to be aimed in each other's direction.
"Are you from the island?" asked Jack. "You sound like you're familiar with the community here."
"Familiar?" echoed Mira. "Yes, perhaps that's really why I needed to come back here, to see what would happen in the coming months."
"Are you expecting something to happen?" asked Jack.
She gave him that mischievous look again, and he felt the tension in the room go up several notches.
"I am no good at talking about myself, as I'm sure you've noticed," said Mira.
"Tell me about yourself, Jack. What are the things that drive you in life?"
It was a general question, but it also managed to feel more personal than anything Jack had been asked in a very long time.
"To be honest, I'm not really sure yet," he said. "I know how cliché it must seem for me to be drifting and aimless at my age, but that's where I'm at right now. I'm still in the process of figuring myself out."
"Would you like some help?" asked Mira.
Jack chuckled, but she kept looking at him, staring with such intensity that he felt naked under her gaze. She ran a finger along the edge of her wine glass and then set it down on the coffee table. Jack took a sip of his own and then placed it next to hers, trying to find meaning in her cryptic words.
"You're kind of mysterious," said Jack. "Has anyone ever told you that before?"
"It's in my nature," she said, leaning in a little closer to him.
"Does it make you uncomfortable?"
Jack smiled and shook his head. Mira's eyes were still locked onto his, and her gaze had a strange pull to it. The brown flecks he'd noticed earlier looked almost like they'd grown in size, and they didn't seem to be brown at all anymore, but closer to the color of rust. She brought her face in closer to his slowly, tentatively, watching his reaction. Jack felt his heart pounding in his chest and was suddenly aware of how red and perfect her lips were. He brought his hand up to her cheek. It felt cold, but he didn't care. He needed to kiss her more than he'd ever needed anything before in his life. He pressed his lips against hers and felt Mira enthusiastically kissing back. He put an arm around her, embracing her as the moment began to heat up. The logical part of him knew that the situation was moving way too fast, but it was overruled by a desperate, forbidden urgency. She was beautiful, and he wanted what she was offering. Jack shifted forward, leaning her back onto the couch. Mira giggled as he continued kissing her neck. He slid one of his hands under her sweater and felt the silky fabric of her bra underneath. Her breasts, as he quickly discovered, were a good deal larger than they appeared through her clothes.
"Such a beautiful outcome," whispered Mira, "and I thought the story was over."
She ran her hands through Jack's hair. He was too turned on to stop and process what she was saying. He'd taken his shirt off and was fumbling to kick his jeans loose from where one leg had stubbornly bunched around his ankle.
"You don't have to rush, Jack," whispered Mira. "This is just the beginning."
She pulled her leggings down but left the rest of her clothing on. Jack slid a hand up her thigh, quickly discovering that she wasn't wearing any panties. He gave her a deep kiss and guided her legs open, trying to keep his anticipation balanced against his horniness. Mira was already moving underneath him, swaying her hips upward in a teasing, hinting motion. Jack cupped her cheek and then let his fingers move to play with her long, golden ponytail. He kissed her on the lips again, twice in quick succession. Then he locked eyes with her, making sure she was still comfortable. Mira was biting her lower lip slightly and gave a slow nod as he pushed forward, letting his shaft slide into her. The hot, crushing pleasure of that first moment was almost unreal, and Mira immediately received him with sensual, active movements. Her legs wrapped tightly around his waist, and she pressed her fingernails into his shoulders hard enough to urge him on without causing pain. She made a noise somewhere in between a moan and a whimper, planting a wet kiss on his bare shoulder. He could hear every breath she took, and the way each grew more pleasured in tiny increments as Jack thrust into her harder and faster. He pulled her sweater up to expose her breasts, groping one through her bra and letting the other bounce and jiggle in response to the pace of their movements. Mira kissed him and ran her finger up the side of his chin. Jack gave her breast a hard squeeze, feeling like the luckiest man in the entire world. Mira moaned as he tweaked her nipple. They kissed again, and then he was moving at a frantic pace, pushing into her for all he was worth. Jack lost himself in the moment, enjoying her body and her warm, soft presence. He felt Mira's lips against his neck, pressing teasing kisses around one spot in particular. It was insanely hot, and he was already nearing his limit.
"He wanted to protect you," whispered Mira. "He should have taught you instead of hiding you."
Jack could only barely hear her through the groaning of the shifting couch, but her words sent a chill through him. He tried to slow down and found that he couldn't. He was too turned on, too locked into the moment, and there was an element to the compulsion that went beyond his own sexual need.
"One final parting gift," said Mira. "I told you I'd have my revenge, Peter."
Pain and pleasure hit Jack like a slap in the face. Mira had dug her teeth into the spot she'd been kissing on his neck. Pain and pleasure. Pleasure and pain. Jack's body shivered from the intensity of it. He was still on top of her, but she now had him at her mercy. Whatever it was that he was experiencing went above and beyond what his psyche could withstand. Mira's teeth were still gouged into his neck, and he could feel her lips against his skin, hot and wet. It was magnitudes more intimate than the sex had been. One of her hands continued to run through his hair, caressing him and calming him as she drank his blood. Jack loved her. What a strange thing for him to realize, he thought. He loved her more deeply than he'd known he could love anything or anyone. His body was submerged in sensation, in orgasmic bliss, warm and safe and full of promise. The feeling was so strong that he knew instantly that he must be dreaming and that he'd be waking up any minute now. Mira stopped biting him. Jack groaned, suddenly feeling the cold of the room and wanting the warmth back. She caressed his cheek and gave him a quick kiss on the lips. She tasted sweet and tangy.
"Go to sleep, Jack," she whispered.
"We'll see each other again soon." Chapter 6. Jack opened his eyes. He was lying on the couch, shivering and naked. His neck was throbbing, and the back of his throat felt scratchy and dry. He groaned and sat up, fighting a spell of dizziness. He coughed. Something felt off about his mouth, almost like he'd chipped his two upper canine teeth. No, that wasn't right. It was more like the feeling after getting fillings put in, like his teeth didn't quite fit the same as they had before. It was still dark outside, meaning he couldn't have been asleep for more than a couple of hours. Had he been asleep? He remembered Mira, the mysterious woman he'd invited inside. His hand went to his neck, and he saw red on his fingers when he brought them back into view. "What the fuck?" he muttered. "Jack? Hello?" Katie's voice came from down the hall in the foyer. Jack hurried to pull his clothes back on, feeling his face heat up at the thought of having to explain to her why he was bleeding and naked after the bizarre turn his evening had taken. "Why was the door left open?" Katie trailed off as she entered the lounge and caught sight of him. Her eyes went wide, and she clamped a hand over her mouth and started shaking her head. "I did something stupid," muttered Jack. "There was this woman outside, and she seemed nice, so I, well..." "Fuck!" shouted Katie. "Fuck! Fuck! I am a fucking idiot!" Jack furrowed his brow. "No, it's not your fault," he said. "Are there any bandages in the bathroom?" He stood up from the couch and took a step toward her. "I'll get you one," Katie said quickly. "You just wait right here. I'll be right back."
Okay, said Jack.
"Can you get me something to drink, too? I feel so thirsty all of a sudden." Katie backed away without turning around. Jack could smell her perfume, a sweet, almost intoxicating scent. He started walking after her, his legs moving on their own. He needed to be closer to her. He needed something. He started to feel dizzy again once he'd made it out into the foyer, and he had to lean against the railing of the stairs for support. Katie appeared from the downstairs bathroom, slowly moving toward him with a bandage in one hand. "The person who bit you," said Katie. "Who was it?"
"It was a woman," said Jack. "She said her name was Mira." "Wait, how did you know someone bit me?"
Katie nodded, as though he'd confirmed an unvoiced suspicion. "Jack," she said, "there's blood on your hand, too. Let me see it." She stepped in a little closer to him. Her smell was almost too much for Jack to handle, and he could somehow feel the warmth radiating off her body. Katie had put her hair up into a bun and donned earrings at some point, and the combination seemed to emphasize the beautiful angles of the side of her neck.
"My hand."
Jack glanced at his fingers, and then held his hand out toward her.
"I don't think it's cut."
"Be quiet," said Katie. "Stay still while I take a look." She stepped into Jack's reach and moved almost faster than his eyes could follow, seizing his wrist and clipping a bracelet onto it.
"No, not a bracelet. A handcuff."
Katie closed the other loop around the railing of the stairs and then hopped back a few feet, narrowing her eyes.
"Fuck," she muttered. "I'm so fucking stupid. How did I not see this coming?"
Jack pulled against the handcuff. "What the hell, Katie?" he said, glaring at her. "Can you at least give me the bandage? My neck still feels like it's bleeding." She wasn't listening to him. Katie had her arms crossed over her breasts, and her expression was set into a thoughtful frown. "Quit complaining." After another few silent seconds, "Jack, look, you need to know the situation that you're in." Jack rattled his handcuffs.
"An explanation would be nice," he said.
Katie let her eyes meet his. For the first time since arriving back on Lesterin Island, Jack saw a glimmer of the girl he'd once known in her expression. She was worried and a little scared, but the emotions were tamped down by her determination and resolve. "The woman who bit you was a vampire," she said, speaking slowly and enunciating clearly. "They exist. They're real. And now you're one of them." Jack stared at her for a couple of seconds and then let out a single chuckle.
"You have a strange sense of humor," he said. "So what? Was she a friend of yours? Did you two think it would be funny to try to scare me or something?
She gave you what's called the embrace, said Katie. It's the kind of bite that spreads the vampiric curse. I'm not sure what her motive was, but this is what's happened.
Jack frowned and shook his head. He watched Katie closely, expecting her to smile or do something to give away her prank. She looked visibly disturbed, and she ran a hand across her forehead as she let out a stressed-out sigh.
I don't have time to waste convincing you, she said. There's a lot you haven't been told, Jack. Your grandfather was a power player in the realm of the supernatural, and he made a lot of enemies.
That's ridiculous, said Jack. Come on, enough with the joke. This woman wasn't a vampire. She was a friend of my grandfather.
Believe what you want, said Katie. Peter was Mira's arch-nemesis. This isn't the first time she's attacked the mansion, but it is the first time she's gotten the better of us.
Katie swore again under her breath and then shook her head. You can't be serious, said Jack. You think she embraced me, or whatever, to turn me into a vampire, and that's why you handcuffed me? Katie, do you really expect me to buy this shit?
Katie seemed to come to a decision. She hurried past Jack, heading downstairs into the mansion's basement. He got a whiff of her scent as she went by, and shivered at the thrill it sent through him.
Katie? He shouted. Where are you going? Hey!
He pulled against the handcuffs again, trying to slip his hand loose. They were tight against his wrist, though, and all he managed to do was chafe his skin and leave parallel red lines where the metal dug in. His skin looked paler than he remembered, and he felt a prickle on the hairs of the back of his neck.
No way, he muttered. This can't be possible.
Katie reappeared in the foyer after a few minutes, and it almost felt like a remix of when Jack had first returned to the mansion. She'd taken off her earrings but left her hair up, and she'd changed into a new outfit. Katie was now wearing a skin-tight black leather catsuit with a metal zipper running between her breasts and up to her neckline. It clung to her body like a glove and proved to Jack that her figure wasn't quite as devoid of curves as he'd originally thought.
She might still be around, said Katie. If I can find her and kill her, then all of this will be no more than a bad dream come tomorrow morning. Katie, come on, he said. This is ridiculous.
You shouldn't have come back, Jack, she said, for so many goddamn reasons.
Katie, enough playing around.
Oh, trust me, she said. I'm not playing. It was only then that Jack noticed the black metal crossbow strung across her back and the pouch of silver bolts hanging from the bag at her side. She walked past him, and again, Jack felt like she was taunting him with her fantastic smell.
Let me come with you, he said. You can explain more while we look for her, and if you're really telling the truth, I'll go along with whatever it is you're planning.
He was finding it harder to convince himself that Katie was playing a prank on him. His tongue probed at his teeth again, at his fangs.
No, this wasn't a prank, he realized. It could be a dream, but Katie was serious about the situation.
Not a chance, said Katie. Try to relax if you can. Hopefully, this will all be over soon. She hurried toward the mansion's door, slipping out and closing it behind her. Jack heard the locks being engaged from outside, and then the mansion was silent again.
Chapter 7
Jack had no intention of staying behind. He started pulling at his wrists again as soon as the door had shut. There was no way he was going to get his wrist loose, but the other circle of the handcuffs was tightened around the stairway railing. If he could somehow pull it free. The railing was made of thick, polished wood. He'd have as much luck trying to punch through a car door with his fist. Jack grimaced, feeling suddenly claustrophobic at the idea of being trapped where he was. He gave the handcuffs a hard pull. The wood groaned slightly, but nothing else happened. He dropped into a crouch and took a deep breath. The dizziness he'd felt earlier was still there, on the edge of his awareness. But another sensation took priority over it. He really wanted to go outside, into the night, and find Katie.
He slammed his body forward, tossing all his strength and then some into a desperate attempt to break the railing. And to his surprise, it did break. Jack tumbled forward as his momentum threw him off balance. He fell into a roll that was more graceful than any similar fall he'd taken before and rose to his feet. He looked back at the railing, only then fully appreciating what he'd done. The wood was nearly as thick as a baseball bat, and he'd snapped it like a dead tree branch. Katie was telling the truth, and all of the evidence pointed to that same truth. "She turned me into a vampire," he muttered. "That bitch." Even as he spoke the words, he felt the emotions that Mira had stirred within him returning. The sex had been incredible, and even the sensation of her teeth piercing into his skin had been sensual and intimate. Katie had implied that if she could find Mira, she could somehow return him to normal. Jack wanted to find her too, but as much just to see her again as to find a solution to whatever transformation he'd just gone through. He hurried out the mansion's front entrance and into the night. It was late, after midnight, but the darkness seemed to welcome him. A crow let out a loud caw from overhead, and Jack glanced up in time to see the silhouette of a surprisingly large bird taking flight from the mansion's roof. He could see the headlights of a car in the distance heading away from the mansion, and knew that it had to be Katie in pursuit of Mira. The moon was out, and the sky was studded with stars, but Jack's night vision felt improved to the point where he suspected that he would have been able to see outlines even in pitch darkness. He broke into a sprint, his muscles working faster and more efficiently than he'd ever experienced before. He ran straight down the slope, gaining ground on Katie's car as it meandered down the winding path. It almost looked as though Katie was heading back into Lessertown, but she took a turn on the outskirts, heading somewhere else. By the time she finally came to a stop, Jack was only a few hundred feet behind her. They were outside of a dilapidated warehouse next to an old lumber mill. Katie climbed out of the car, turning on a flashlight and scanning the nearby area. Jack stepped forward just as the beam moved across him, holding his hands up in an attempt to put her at ease. "I told you to stay put," she hissed. "And I told you to take the handcuffs off me," replied Jack. "We'll have to replace the railing now, before we start showing the mansion to any interested buyers."
"Fuck you," said Katie.
"Fuck you," said Jack. "Besides, if Mira really is a vampire, you can't expect me to let you face her alone."
"That's exactly what I expect," snapped Katie. "I have no idea how you'll react around your broodmother. It's best if you just stay the fuck away."
"My broodmother?"
Jack raised an eyebrow at that. "She's the vampire that gave you the embrace," said Katie. "She used a sacrifice of her own blood essence to do it. She's your broodmother, by definition."
Jack shook his head, unsure of how he felt about that. He focused on the warehouse ahead. There weren't any lights showing through the windows. It looked abandoned and on the verge of collapsing of its own volition.
"How do you know this is the right place?" he asked.
"I don't." Katie loaded a silver bolt into her crossbow, grimacing as she pulled it back into position. "But this is where Peter and I fought the last vampire who arrived in town. They tend to be a little predictable about where they set up shop."
"My grandfather let you go with him to fight a vampire?"
"Of course he did," said Katie. "I was his apprentice." She said it so confidently, even though the words felt like a slap in the face to him. He'd been sent away from the island, shipped off to relatives that barely knew him and could only pretend to care, while Katie stayed behind, learning and being entrusted with Jack's grandfather's deepest secrets. It made no sense to him in the slightest. Had it been to keep him safe? To protect him the best way his grandfather knew how in the wake of his parents' deaths? If so, it had only worked for so long. And finding out just how much he'd missed out on only added insult to injury.
"Come on," said Katie. "We don't have time to waste. If she's in there, try to distract her so I can get a clean shot off. Killing your broodmother is the only chance we have at returning you to normal."
"I'll see what I can do," said Jack. "Just don't shoot me by mistake."
He'd meant it as a joke, but Katie's silence left him wondering.
She started forward, holding the crossbow with just one arm, while keeping the flashlight propped in the direction she was aiming with the other. The warehouse's front door was missing a handle, and it swung open easily to allow them entry. The building had the damp, moldy scent common to locations prone to flooding. Katie swept her flashlight back and forth across the space,